Tom Dooley's Sales to Infamy, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
What I'm doing is enabling all qualified Americans to serve their country in uniform.
One of the most aggressive examples of de jure discrimination against trans individuals by the Trump administration is now gone.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Honduran lawmakers protect marriage inequality, honored Australians protest a homophobe's top award, and Joe Biden liberates U.S. transgender troops. Those stories and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Michael Lebeau.
And I'm Paula Thomas.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending January 30th, 2021. The Honduran legislature has voted to make it more difficult to undo constitutional bans on marriage equality and abortion. Amendments to the country's constitution in 2005 banned civil marriage and adoption rights for same-gender couples. They also denied recognition to same-gender unions legally contracted in other countries. The vote on January 28th upped the threshold for amending the Constitution from a two-thirds majority to three-quarters. The same supermajority will be needed to change the strict ban on abortion. Current law punishes a woman who terminates a pregnancy and anyone who helps her with up to 6 years in prison. The Roman Catholic Church has considerable political influence in the conservative country. Leading Honduran activist Kevin Ramos told Reuters that this reform is the product of a state-imposed religion. Christian Gonzalez Cabrera is a Human Rights Watch researcher for Latin America and the Caribbean. He criticized state-sponsored homophobia, while many of the country's Central American neighbors are advancing equality. Cabrera told Out magazine that Honduras's draconian laws already prohibit abortion and marriage equality, so the reform attempts to prohibit future lawmakers from reconsidering the issues. The vote in the legislature this week was 88 in favor, 28 opposed, and 7 abstaining. According to Reuters, final passage requires a second vote next year.
Three trans-supportive Singapore activists were arrested, just as three others were launching another challenge to laws banning consensual adult gay sex. The arrest came late this week at a small public demonstration protesting the Education Ministry's refusal to allow a transgender student to get hormone therapy. Ministry officials have denied the charge. Agence France-Presse reports that three protesters ranging in age from 19 to 32 were arrested for participating in a public assembly without a permit and for ignoring warnings to disband. Public gatherings in the Asian city-state are generally not allowed without a police permit, no matter the size of the crowd. They're not often granted. 23-year-old organizer Alvin Tung was not arrested in the tiny protest. She told the French news agency that LGBTQ students in school are not treated well. She described strict gender norm requirements dictating student clothing and hairstyles. Tung added that the government doesn't see us as important enough to be protected. Those arrests are all out on bail for the time being. Meanwhile, three other Singapore activists renewed their challenges to the ban on gay sex. A retired doctor, a popular DJ, and a veteran rights activist filed separate cases that were dismissed in a consolidated ruling of the High Court last year. The three filed a joint challenge to that decision this week in the Court of Appeal. An effort to overturn the law failed in 2014. Officials say that it's innocuous because it's rarely enforced.
Taiwan would recognize legally contracted marriages of same-gender couples from nearly every country in the world under a draft resolution approved this week. The exception would be couples with one partner from China, according to the Central News Agency. Those couples would be subject to separate laws governing Taiwan-China relations. However, one of the partners can be from Hong Kong or Macau, according to the judicial yuan. The judicial branch of Taiwan's government approved the draft resolution on January 22nd. A 2017 ruling by Taiwan's Constitutional Court gave lawmakers 2 years to open civil marriage to Taiwanese same-gender couples, which they did in 2019. the draft resolution extending marriage equality to most binational same-gender couples will be sent to the executive yuan. The two government branches are then expected to jointly submit the proposal to the legislative yuan for its consideration.
Gay men were caned in the public square again in the Indonesian province of Aceh. Aceh's long-running separatist movement reached a settlement with the Indonesian federal government in 2015 that allows the province to govern under Sharia, or strict Islamic law. Two men in their late 20s were arrested in November. Suspicious neighbors broke into their rented room and allegedly caught them having sex, according to the province's acting Sharia police chief. They were each sentenced to 80 strokes of the cane the following month. The punishment was reduced to 77 lashes, considering time served in prison. Five hooded enforcers took turns administering the painful strokes of a rattan cane across the back. Sharia also punishes drinking alcohol and extramarital sex as moral offenses with up to 100 lashes. Other such criminals include gamblers, women who wear tight clothes, and men who skip Friday prayers. One particularly concerning report says that the police are investigating the other men in the couple's social media contact list. Despite having a supposedly secular government, Indonesian officials have stepped up anti-queer rhetoric in recent years. A U.S. lesbian couple was deported in mid-January after one of them posted a message on social media calling Bali queer-friendly.
The European Court of Human Rights has sided with two Romanian trans men who were not allowed to change the gender designation on their legal documents without first having reassignment surgery. Each man had applied to their government more than 6 years ago to amend their gender identity in civil status records, but courts refused to grant their request without proof that they had undergone the surgery. The European Court noted in late January that Romanian courts have granted identity changes for other trans people who had not had surgery. It described the Eastern European nation's legal framework around gender as unclear and therefore unforeseeable. Each plaintiff was awarded the equivalent of more than $11,000 by the Eurocourt in pecuniary and non-pecuniary damages for their emotional turmoil, which was worsened by Romania's arduous years-long court system.
In the U.S., President Joe Biden's temporary head of the Justice Department Civil Rights Division revoked an anti-queer parting shot from a Trump appointee. The 11th-hour, 22-page memorandum claimed limitations on the June 2020 Supreme Court ruling affirming federal job rights protections for LGBTQ people. Greg Friel says that those assertions contradicted Biden's first-day executive order affirming that high court ruling. It states that the Biden-Harris administration would fight all discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. One of the first acts of the new Biden administration was a presidential executive order reversing Trump's ban on military service by qualified transgender people. We'll have expanded coverage and analysis of that significant action later on many of these same This Way Out stations.
An elevated Australia Day honor for controversial tennis champion turned evangelist Margaret Court has drawn fire from LGBTQ activists and their allies. Court has been named a Companion of the Order of Australia, the country's highest civilian award. She was first honored as an officer of the Order of Australia in 2007. The retired tennis player became a Pentecostal minister in 1995 and an outspoken opponent of LGBTQ people's very right to exist. She's compared gay people to Nazis, claimed that lesbian tennis players recruit younger athletes, and described transgender children as being of the devil. She ignored COVID-19 restrictions and held services even at the height of the pandemic in Australia, claiming that the blood of Jesus would protect her and her congregation. Needless to say, Court has a number of high-profile detractors. Medical professor Caroline DaCosta returned the Order of Australia award she was given in 2014 in protest. She also happens to be the mother of a gay son. Explaining her reason in an open letter, DaCosta called Court's words harmful and damaging to a large proportion of my fellow Australians. The growing list of well-known figures who've also returned their Australia Day honors includes celebrated transgender doctor Clara Tuck Meng Su, artist Peter Kingston, former Consul General to Bali Brent Hall, veteran journalist Kerry O'Brien, and Reverend Alistair McRae, former president of the United Church of Australia. As he starkly explained, Bad Theology Kills People.
Finally, male Gentoo penguin couple Sven and Magic are back in the news. The queer seabirds became world famous in 2018 after zookeepers at Sydney's Sea Life Aquarium noticed them attempting to hatch a rock and gave them an egg rejected by another penguin to care for. They successfully hatched and raised their first chick, which zookeepers named Lara. Sven and Magic recently hatched a second chick who's doing well, and penguin supervisor Carrie Dixon says it needs a name. To celebrate Penguin Awareness Day on January 20th, he wanted to give Sven and Magic fans around the world the chance to name their second chick. Log on to visitsealife.com/Sydney and click on News to submit your suggestion. You'll need to explain your choice in the proverbial 25 words or less.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending January 30th, 2021. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is recording remotely during the COVID-19 emergency. It's written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out radio channel on YouTube. For This Way Out, I'm Paula Thomas. Stay healthy.
And I'm Michael LeBeau. Stay safe.
So much cooler online.
There's nothing cooler than the world's only international LGBT radio magazine.
Unless it's thiswayout.org.
At thiswayout.org, you'll find program information,
related videos,
expanded features,
newsroom transcripts,
and CDs and downloadable material.
It might not be cooler than radio,
but there's much more This Way Out at thiswayout.org.
I think this is an important moment, not only for trans service members, but for building trans justice, not because the military is a site of liberation, but because de jure discrimination by the government is an impediment to organizing and survival of our communities.
Lifting the trans ban is about more than the U.S. military later in the program. But first... here's the story of an earlier distinguished queer service member.
Tom Dooley sails to infamy, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. In 1954, Navy Dr. Tom Dooley was aboard USS Montague, headed for Vietnam to evacuate refugees. Disheartened by their rampant diseases like smallpox, malaria, and leprosy, he went into full gear, treating 300 to 400 people a day at the refugee camps. The model of efficiency, he published a book about his experiences there. In early 1956, he was accused of being gay. His phones were tapped. Agents tracked his every move. Despite Dooley's accomplishments, the Navy quickly slapped him with these words, "undesirable discharge." As much as those words plagued him, he returned to Southeast Asia and built a network of clinics tending hundreds of thousands of rural people. Although Dooley died in 1961 at the age of 37, it was clear that only one label had stuck: humanitarian. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and is recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me. I'm Dan Roberts.
If I were a frog, here is what I would say. It's hard being green. It's hard being gay.
Hi, this is Janice Ian, and you're listening to This Way Out.
Trans women who only want to serve. Trans men who want rights we all deserve. POTUS thinks it's unsavory. Patriots who know real bravery. Trump's got hate for me and you.
That's the note the outgoing U.S. administration danced off the stage on. But President Joe Biden is singing a much different tune.
This is reinstating a position that previous commanders and as well as the secretaries have supported. And what I'm doing is enabling all qualified Americans to serve their country in uniform and essentially restoring the situation that existed before with transgender personnel, if qualified in every other way, can serve their government in the United States military. Thank you again.
Signing one of the 24 executive orders of his first 2 weeks in office, President Biden on January 25th rescinded his predecessor's ban on trans people serving in the military. The former commander-in-chief originally announced the ban in a July 2017 tweet that took even the Pentagon brass by surprise. Any discharges based on gender dysphoria are now halted, and discharges that occurred under the ban will be re-examined. Questions remain, and details need to be worked out, but the Departments of Defense and Homeland Security are to report back on implementation of the restored inclusive policy in 60 days. While historic gains for trans and other queer people are being won on the federal level, you'd better keep your eye on the ball at the state and territory levels. Legislators are moving to block gender changes to birth certificates in South Dakota and to lift the ban on conversion therapy in Oklahoma. In Alabama, they're trying to prevent doctors from prescribing gender-affirming medications to trans children. A similar bill just failed in Montana, but lawmakers there made up for it by advancing a measure to keep trans girls out of school sports. Meanwhile, in Puerto Rico, Governor Pedro Pierluisi has declared a state of emergency due to the staggering rise in incidents of femicide against trans women in particular. Chase Strangio is Deputy Director for Transgender Justice of the ACLU's LGBT and HIV Project. He appeared on Democracy Now! To talk with Juan Gonzalez and Amy Goodman about all this and the significance of Biden's executive order.
If we go back in time to the beginning of the Trump administration, some of the very first things that he did was to target transgender people, first in schools, and then, if we recall, in July of 2017, by tweet, he decided to ban open trans service in the U.S. military. So finally, after years of litigation, after trans service members being in this precarious position, Biden and Secretary of Defense Austin yesterday lift the ban on open trans service, allowing any qualified individual who is transgender to continue serving in the military, and directing the Department of Defense and the Department of Homeland Security to implement a process whereby not only trans people can remain in the military, but can enlist, and then also ensure that trans people are able to access healthcare while serving in the military, and that anyone can have their records marking their gender updated to accurately reflect who they are. So this is obviously an incredibly important development, one of the most aggressive examples of de jure discrimination against trans individuals by the Trump administration is now gone.
Well, Chase, this issue of executive orders basically determining whether trans people can serve is basically, it could go back and forth. What are the prospects for some kind of congressional decision on this issue so that we don't have to depend on the whims or the viewpoints of a particular administration?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good question. I think in many ways, over the past 10 years and more, really, we've seen, because of the failure of Congress to act in so many ways, the power of the executive expands substantially, and so much being done by executive order and directives to federal executive agencies. I do think when it comes to the issue of open trans service, you know, if we recall, even under Obama, there was a ban on open trans service. It didn't get changed until the end of the second Obama term in 2016, but after years of review. I think what we're going to end up seeing is that after 4 or 8 years of open trans service, that it is going to just be something that we accept as a matter of course, whether or not Congress acts. Because the reality is that trans people have been serving in the military for decades. And the question is, are we going to let them serve openly and proudly, or are we going to force them into the shadows as the Trump administration had done? But the reality is I do think this is going to be relatively uncontroversial over time, because we already have tens of thousands of trans service members and hundreds of thousands of trans veterans. And so I think, you know, this is an important step in taking away some of the most explicit forms of discrimination that we had seen under the Trump administration. And I think one important thing to note is that it really wasn't about the military. I mean, this was announced by tweet. You know, Secretary Mattis, Defense Secretary Mattis, who was Defense Secretary at the time, really had no idea that this was going to happen. And this was part of a larger project to expel trans people from public life, to enact discriminatory measures. And so that's really the battle that we're fighting against, not only at the federal level, but of course, you know, in many ways across the country. So whether or not Congress acts, I do think once we have sort of policy implementations from the federal agencies, the Defense Department and the Department of Homeland Security, I do think that, you know, we're going to see open trans service, and that after 8-10 years, it's going to be something that we accept as a general matter. I also think we have to keep in mind that while we may critique and should the larger project of U.S. militarism and the U.S. military, it remains the largest employer in the United States. And what the ban did was take away the employment benefits that people had worked decades for, their ability to support themselves and their families. And this was really about taking away people's autonomy, taking away people's autonomy over their labor. And so I think that as we abolish and destabilize these harmful institutions that are wreaking havoc across the globe, that we can't do so at the expense of the lives and well-being of individuals, many of whom are coerced because of systemic racism and poverty into the institutions themselves. So from my perspective, this is a critical moment in ending, you know, de jure discrimination, revaluing the labor and bodies of people who have been working incredibly hard and were relying on benefits that, for better or worse, that we coerce people into receiving in many ways. You know, and as someone who, you know, I hold a very, you know, significant critique of U.S. militarism and the Defense Department budget, and also come from a military family. And so while, yes, I don't want our military enacting violence abroad as it inherently does, when my family member is deployed, I also want them to be safe. And that inevitably means investing some amount of resources into a system that I despise. And so I think we have to hold the complexity of that truth. It's not just so simple as we can allow the government to ban a group of people from problematic institutions. We have to recognize that, you know, we are supporting individuals while we are fighting against systems. And I think this is an important moment, not only for trans service members, but for building trans justice, not because the military is a site of liberation, but because de jure discrimination by the government is an impediment to organizing and survival of our communities.
And Chase, could you talk about the various bills that are now at the state level, the anti-trans bills, some of which are being voted on this week?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the, you know, saddest things for me right now is that, you know, we had this change in administration, and the Biden, you know, administration on day one, on the day of inauguration, it issues this relatively innocuous executive order, essentially saying, I'm going to follow federal law. Federal law prohibits sex discrimination. The Supreme Court has already said that means you can't discriminate against LGBTQ people. And yet we have this significant backlash to the very notion that transhumanity is going to be recognized. And one way that is manifesting are in dozens of bills across the country that would ban trans young people from sports and criminalize healthcare for trans youth. And so at a time when we're facing, you know, epidemics of homelessness, a global pandemic, so many kids aren't in school, they're learning on Zoom, you know, they're not able to participate in sports, we're having states take aim at the bodies of trans young people and telling them that not only should they be excluded from the activities that their peers are participating in, but that the healthcare that they're relying on is about to become a crime. Yesterday, I spent 3 hours listening to floor debates in Montana and just hearing the most horrible things about trans people that are directed at young people by their government. The long-term cost of the introduction of these bills alone, let alone their potential passage, is going to be felt for generations. It is truly painful to hear a movement that essentially at its core believes that being trans is wrong and should be eradicated.
And what are the kinds of policies that you would hope the Biden-Harris administration would pursue in terms of trans rights beyond just the issue of the military?
I think what we need to see is an aggressive enforcement, first and foremost, of federal civil rights laws. The states that are trying to attack trans students should be aware that they're putting their federal funding on the line, and we need the Biden-Harris administration to take an aggressive position to ensure that trans people are fully protected under the law. But also, we need to go much further than that. We know that civil rights protections on their own aren't going to save trans lives. We have people experiencing high rates of criminalization and homelessness. We need aggressive action from this administration to end deportations, to really have meaningful efforts to decarcerate, to end systems of policing that disproportionately harm our communities, to take, aggressive stances against bills that criminalize sex work, that make it harder for people to survive, particularly for trans people of color, Black trans women in particular, who are repeatedly profiled and targeted as sex workers or perceived sex workers. So we need to hold this administration to account, not just to espouse, formalistic notions of equality, but really build out meaningful programs of justice.
Chase, can you talk about the move made by the new governor of Puerto Rico, who's declared a state of emergency over gender-based violence after a wave of killings targeting women and transgender people? Can you talk about the significance of this?
Yeah, I think one of the greatest challenges, and particularly when we're looking at movements from a legal perspective, is how do we deal with the systemic violence that is affecting so many? And, across the United States and in Puerto Rico, we are seeing so many, trans women and girls murdered. We're also obviously seeing so many cis women and girls murdered. And how do we deal with the fact that we have systems in place that allow for violence to continue, and yet the only solutions that we have tend to be carceral? And so I think having, leaders, executives come in and say, this is an emergency. This is a public health emergency. This is an emergency of survival. And we have to come up with solutions that aren't just about sending people to prisons and jails, but are about looking at the roots of why people's bodies are so precariously situated that it leads to mass death, whether that is at the hands of individuals, as we're seeing in the murders in Puerto Rico and across, the world, and at the hands of the government, the sort of metaphorical hands of the government, because we set people up to be victims of violence, whether that's state violence or individually perpetrated violence. And so I think we need more recognition of the public health crisis of violence against women, cis and trans, and then systems in place that don't just rely on putting people in jail, but actually look at how we can, distribute resources so people are actually experiencing safety and not just the illusion of safety that comes through carceral control.
That was Chase Strangio of the ACLU speaking with Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez on Democracy Now! Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Michael Lebeau and Paula Thomas, produced by Brian DeShazer, and Dan Roberts, produced by Jed Proctor and Ryan Burns. Thanks also to Amy Goodman, Juan Gonzalez, and Democracy Now! James Corden performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks to Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, a bequest from Christopher Dare Trentum, and donors James Kennedy and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WADR Janesville, Wisconsin, KPNW Bellingham, Washington, 4NSA New Saheds, Queensland, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.